Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly, which carries his moniker, although he departed this veil of tears over 2 years ago. We try and preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today we have Gail Kellner, Kevin Jones, and me, Bruce Hallman, zooming in from our Vachon homes, and Truman O'Brien and Lynn Kerrigan in the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Let me introduce and hear what's going on in the world of each of the Brieflies. Our virtual master of the mix and also in person, and Zoom modulating sound engineer, treetop skimming pilot, Vachon rancher out of West Texas and Montana, Truman O'Brien. I thought you were going to be in handcuffs with the FBI this morning.
I'm heading that way now, Bruce. Thank you. Thank you for that. And just so that you know what he's talking about, I'm giving a talk today to both the FBI and the DEA, if you can imagine, to their aviation departments. And I'm going to buzz out of here right now and turn this over to the capable hands of Lynn Kerrigan, who's going to finish engineering for you this morning. And I just say thanks a lot, guys, and I'll see you next week.
Hey, it's good knowing you, Truman.
Truman, remember to have a redo.
Make sure they read you. Would you?
Make sure they read you your Miranda rights.
And if you don't come out in the next, hour, we're coming after you.
There you go. There you go.
Exactly. Yeah, I've heard of scams before, but you know.
Well, good luck, Truman. So while Lynn is getting situated here, let me introduce Kevin Jones, who, after reflecting on his years as a rocket scientist from his perch on top of the island above Burton, and is the phantom editor of Invisible Vachon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration. Kevin, what's the next big thing on Indivisible's calendar and your calendar?
Well, let's see, a couple of things. So for your consideration is becoming more and more phantom as the days go by, but we do send out breaking news when warranted. The Indivisible Vachon is a meeting tomorrow. Actually, it's 7 o'clock. You can go to indivisiblevachon.org on your computer. And at the very top of the homepage, you can hit the click to register to join the meeting. We will be previewing on the Brown Briefly here a little bit about what passed in the state legislature, and then diving in with four invited speakers at the Indivisible Vachon meeting tomorrow night. So if you'd like to hear a little bit from some experts on what happened in the legislature, join us. And we have the hat contest, for which prizes to some of our local food vendors will be awarded. So bring your questions, bring your intrigue, bring your hat, and join us tomorrow night.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. So ensconced in her family's multi-generational cabin at Sylvan Beach is futurist, writer, dreamcatcher, recently published author, and peripatetic poet Gail Kellner. Gail, do you have some soothing words for us during these troubled times?
Well, you know, I have a couple of things for you this morning. My eyes lately have been on the great gray green sea that stretches out around Vachon Island. And I guess some good news is that I've seen an amazing uptick in the number of diving ducks in the Salish Sea over the last year. And I would be interested to know what the Audubon Society folks have to say about that, but I attribute it to the limitation on the practices of purse singers going through and trolling and taking off everything out of the sea for weeks at a time in the fall. It seems that with the state stopping that activity in an effort to support orca, the orca whales, and provide more food for them. They have actually also provided food for the many, many diving birds that once lived here. So that's been really exciting to see that. So I see some health coming back into the Salish Sea that I haven't seen for a long time. The other day I looked out, I saw not only the, I mean, I'm talking at times hundreds of ducks out in front, which is a remarkable change. I saw there was a loon out there. There was a seal floating. An otter came by, and word was there was a humpback whale down to the south. And so I got out my rowboat, rowed out just to be there if it happened to pass. It didn't this time, though. I've been out with the big whales in past years. So that's kind of my thoughts from the island. And I have a poem, but maybe I share it now, or maybe we'll save it for a little later when we get into the international news, which may require the poem a little bit more. Sure.
Let's go through the introductions and then we'll get back. That'll be great, Gail. Our listeners may be interested, and Gail, you may be as well. Vashon Audubon, if you go to their website, they have just put up the recent results of the Christmas bird count and all the bird counts going back almost 20 years. And so what you can see is the actual change in the counts of birds done just, you know, generally the first week in January every year. So really counting the winter birds on Vashon. But it's been interesting. You know, when I started doing the Quartermaster Harbor Christmas bird count, you know, back in the late 90s with Danny Wilsey, we would count 1,600, even sometimes more, Western grebes. This past year, we had about 350. So different birds are being affected in different ways by climate change. So, but interesting to look at that sort of scientific sort of accumulation of data over a 20 plus year period. It's pretty fascinating. At the control desk and driving this airplane in lieu of Truman taking
cross
off
your fingers
interrogated by the FBI is Lynn Kerrigan, who comes to us out of the land of magnolias into the island of madrones, comes from is our academic analytical social worker, poet, backup singer, former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes. Lynn, what's going on in your world today?
Good morning. I think given that introduction, I should be introduced as a polymath. Isn't that the word for somebody who has major interest in too many areas?
Or dilettante.
Well, I try not to go there because I try to know a lot about a lot of things, not just a little bit. Hey, I tell you what I've been doing that I will throw into the mix. This is, of course, St. Patrick's Day week, and being Irish, that's my national holiday, and Truman Show right before us was all Irish songs, and I liked it. But I have a fabulous fact for Women's History Month here, which is that women throughout history up until about the 1500s, and this is thanks to the Seattle Times Sunday section, there's a food and drink section that talked about women were the brewmasters, and women brewed everything from religious ceremonial ales in Ireland to lagers in Egypt. And, you know, it preserved wheat, and it was nutrients for the working class. And the thing that I like the most about this is they were also entrepreneurs, especially if they were, you know, poor single women or widows or something like that. And they offered their wares in a cauldron and used pointed hats in the market so they would stand out from the general traffic. So guess what that led to? Somehow
Halloween.
Women were... Well, Halloween and, you know, kind of the targeting of herbalists, yeah, and all of that. So it's kind of a mixed bag here, but I'm looking forward to the fun of St. Patrick's Day and all the wonderful Irish music. So good morning, and let's have a great week, regardless of the evil Cretan that's creeping across Europe.
Great. Thanks, Lynn. I'm Bruce Hallman. I'm hosting today's show, trying to keep some order in the midst of all the chaos we're living through right now. And as a historian, I try and provide a long-range view, continually remind us that while the grinding wheels of justice may take time and may be diverted by the wife of Supreme Court justices at time, they eventually get the bastards in the end. So we hope that justice continues to work.
Here.
Let's check in with this big week ahead. Lynn, you were talking about St. Patrick's Day. What's on everybody's agenda for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think there may be some Celtic musicians that show up at Cliff's Pub, which is back open to music. I think it's on Wednesday nights. So that's kind of where I would go. I have not really heard any other luminaries or bands, you know, coming out to play for this right now. I think we're just at the cusp of musicians getting back together, and I've been meeting and practicing after 2 years with a couple of different groups I play with, and it really takes time to, you know, get your harmonies back, get your fingers moving again, and get going. So I'm not sure if there are any of my buddies that know of any other fabulous music. Let me know, or maybe y'all do. No?
My grandsons are both busily building leprechaun traps. It's a time-honored tradition that my wife Pam introduced to the kindergartens at Chautauqua 20 years ago. And so school kids at Chautauqua are all building leprechaun traps.
Oh, I love that.
My grandsons had the great idea. They're going to use Lucky Charms. Lucky Charms cereal as a sort of
a bait,
incentive to get them into the trap. So they're going to lay a trail of Lucky Charms from the road into the house.
I love that. It's hilarious.
The leprechauns and not the mice and other will follow into the trap.
What that reminds me of is that Janet McAlpin had a little notice in the Beachcomber last week about a contest for building little fairy houses. And she's asking artists to submit photos, I suppose, of their little fairy houses. And they're going to have the winners, I guess up to like 30 winners, put their little tiny houses for small beings, the little people, all over the back of the O Space property. So that will be fun, and it kind of honors that tradition of thinking that there's little sprites and spirits roaming around for mischief and fun, and maybe we can lure a few of them to O Space as well. And thanks, Janet. That's pretty fun.
So, Kevin, what do retired Boeing engineers do for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, you know, I have only a quarter Irish, so I feel that I can reserve part of the day for non-Irish activities if I choose. But it's a great day to recognize the heritage. So many Irish folks have settled in the Northwest. I remember hosting a Zoom meeting not long ago where people talked about, I think it might have been the Equity Committee meeting of the council, actually. And people talked about their names and where they heralded from. And it was amazing how many people had Irish roots in that group. And some were moved to say, I'm afraid I'm maybe not Irish enough.
Everybody's Irish this week.
Exactly. So, I think actually I'll be enjoying hopefully sunnier Squim on St. Patrick's Day. So I'll look forward to that.
Oh, great. Great. And Gail, how about you? Any celebrations in mind?
Well, actually, for me, it's more in line with what Lynn was talking about with involving pointed hats and cauldrons of beer, perhaps. But my friends, housemaids and neighbors, the women get together on the full moon, and we usually build a big fire, and we've taken to taking a skinny dipping in the Salish Sea. So that's in the works for the full moon, which is on Friday. So that's what I'm looking forward to this week.
That's right. We're headed up on the solstice, or the vernal equinox, not the solstice, vernal equinox.
Sunday will be the equinox.
Mm-hmm. Great. That should be a bracing swim on Friday.
Oh, it is. And swim might be an over-exaggeration of what actually happens. Going in, you know, dipping down underneath and then like a cartoon character coming out and leaping hundreds of feet back down to the shore.
Breaching, as it were.
Well, today is the Ides of March, and Shakespeare in his great wisdom took the sort of day in Roman times that was assigned for settling debts to make it for the real settling of debts for Julius Caesar. So any notable Ides of March stories from anybody?
I've actually never known kind of what to watch for. That's the scary thing about the Ides of March. You know, I was very struck by it when I was in high school, that this date being marked throughout history because of that sort of ambush that Caesar had happened to him to overthrow his rule. And, you know, you don't quite know what to do. What do? Look around, just act exceedingly paranoid. I don't know how that would be any different than my usual self.
Today is also World Consumer Day, for what that's worth.
So. Who says?
So all us consumers can organize, right?
Interesting, you know, to think about a World Consumer Day. I think that I'd like to see a day in commemoration of non-consumerism. I think we need to move away from being such a consumer-oriented society and towards one that respects the fragile and limited nature of the earth. And so how about a day where we don't do any shopping? How about a day when we just appreciate what we already have? That's what I'm kind of anti-consumerism in this moment in time.
Sounds like an addendum to Earth Day, April 22nd. Let's just sort of expand the contents of Earth Day to become anti-consumerism as well. At least climate change incentives to consumerism. So, guys, what's happening in your particular Vashon neighborhood at this time? Kevin, what's happening up on the top of the island above Burton?
Yes, yeah, we're settled in here between Wax Orchard Road and Old Mill Road in a nice little hollow, which stays fairly quiet at the end of the road. We're starting to now see more wildlife emerging. The Douglas squirrel was granted a huge bonus when one of the birds pushed a chunk of nut log off of the bird feeder up hanging from the balcony, and it landed on the deck, and guess who found it? And it's always amazing to see a Douglas squirrel eating something that's probably his size and weight. But the daffodils are up, the crocuses are up, the sun is coming out, the grass is growing a little bit taller, and my lawnmower is ready to go. So things are starting to show signs of spring.
Good. Lynn, what's happening in Ellisport?
Oh, we're having around my neighborhood, three of us, maybe four, are having our property surveyed just because there's kind of a house for sale back in there. I shouldn't say that out loud. They'll be trampling people trying to get there. But because of that, sort of three or four of us right in a row are going to have our property surveyed, which sounds very boring, but actually in Ellisport, the last time our property was really platted, it was in 1888. And those old property lines are very
fluid.
Yes, haphazardly matched to the way the roads and the driveways and the lots have all developed. So I've been out this week frantically trying to find my property markers, which means, you know, in the glorious, beautiful days we had early this last week, I've been out pruning and, you know, hauling brush away from what I thought were the corners of my property. And I've never found the property markers yet. But, you know, the surveyor said, well, I'm going to charge you according to how much I have to bushwhack. So I'll be back out there this week trying to find him and make it easy for him. So lots of kind of development, you know, happening. Houses starting to turn over. It's the spring real estate season. Kevin.
Right.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Lynn, are people in the neighborhood concerned? Is significant? Are people lawyering up, or is it just time to get things sorted?
Well, that's happened. I mean, we had one incident recently where there was about a 25-foot difference between where the road was platted and where the road was put, and where the road was platted went right through one of my friend's yard, and she ended up winning that. She did have to go to a lawyer and all the neighbors and kind of put in for, I don't know whether it was considered an easement or how she, you know, handled that, but we had to get that redrawn for her. We as in the royal we, the county.
Yes, yeah.
So we'll see.
It's almost like taking one of those DNA tests. You never know what kind of surprises might show up.
I know.
And Ellisport in particular is renowned for the sort of fluidity of property lines, because it was it was plotted. Most of the lots in Ellisport are 25-foot lots, so hardly anybody owns one lot. Everybody owns two or three or more.
That's right. I own five, 25 by 100 lots.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very strange, because it was actually platted as a Chautauqua assembly ground, so each lot was supposed to be a tent site, basically. So it's an interesting sort of area.
Yeah,
and then there was a great fight in the 1950s over the roads in Ellisport, because the county didn't originally own the roads in Ellisport. They were owned by the Ellisport Chautauqua Corporation. And when the corporation went out of business, then nobody owned the roads. And so a wily attorney claimed that he owned them all. The community had to fight, and the county finally came in and took possession of the roads of Ellisport. But so it's an interesting little community. Yeah, Kevin.
Were pitchforks involved in this, do you recall?
No, that was another fight. That was the fight over access to KVI Beach in the 1950s. The radio station, KVI, tried to block the beach from the public. And thank goodness, in the original sale of that property to KVI Radio in the late 1930s, there was a provision that the beach always had to be accessible to the residents of Ellisport. And so the radio station was threatened to go to court, and there was a commission hearing, but never actually went to trial because the radio station sort of backed off. But at the time when the radio station blocked the beach, a number of Ellisport residents went down with their pitchforks to clear the road so people could get to the beach. So,
you know, I actually own a pitchfork, and I'm thinking I should probably hang on to it.
Yes, I do.
And particularly when those brewers with the pointed hats come out.
And that would be me. I'm now on search for a cauldron, if anybody can find one.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was thinking we might need to use those pitchforks against some of the lawyers. But let's see. So that's just my particular bent. Well, there's a fight brewing on the north end of the island, unfortunately, over the trapping and killing, slaughtering of otters again. Mm-hmm. So that's been a very sad situation. Some of the people down on the northwest side of the beach of the island seem to believe that this is their private resort and have taken to slaughtering and attempting to exterminate all of the otters in the area. So Environmental Law Group is looking into it to see if we have a case against them. I had a fish and wildlife officer with a gun, luckily, you know, in its holster, arrive on my door to talk about it. And we're just beginning to look at what our options are to protect these marine mammals. And that, as I said to him, you know, my family's been here five generations. Those otters, many more generations than me. So they have a right to be here, in my opinion, and intend to stand up for them in any way I can.
You might want to enlighten our listeners a little bit about the conflict that emerged, what, about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago now, when otters were trapped? And
it's exactly the same conflict, honestly. Right. It's people with particularly... people who come over, they're not from the island. They have maybe summer homes. They tend to have a lot of money. Some of them have law degrees. lawyers that, you know, they're kind of bullies when it comes to, you know, I'm going to do anything I want, don't care what the community thinks. Yeah, they killed, it was back in about 2008, actually, how time flies. You know, I watched as they slaughtered a family of six, including four babies, one at a time. And the crying and the distress, not only of the trapped babies, but of the parents trying to get, you know, get out, get them out of the traps, which of course, no opposable thumbs. So it created a lot of contention in our community, small community down here. And so we'll see what comes this time. You know, it's coming around again. And if there's anyone out there in the listening audience that has ideas or support, please feel free to contact me at gailkellner@gmail.com. I'm looking into what can be done.
Gail, just a quick question, another quick question. Isn't it illegal? I mean, you're not supposed to be slaughtering wildlife, are you?
Hence what the environmental law group is looking into. The otters are in a funny category. So sometimes under some conditions, you can remove them. But you should be making every other effort to, you know, if they're on your property and causing damage, to block them from the property or to drive them away in some other fashion. But slaughtering and killing them, whole groups of them, I think it is probably that's what the environmental group is looking into, and they may be bringing suit against people who are participating in this. Go ahead, Kevin.
So Gail Kellner, GAYLEKELLNER @gmail.com. Is that right?
That's right. GAYLEKELLNER @gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin.
And let me suggest, if you are interested, that on Monday night, the 21st at 7 p.m., the Vashon Maury Island Community Council meets.
There you go.
Oh.
And you can go to vmicc.org and sign up to attend the meeting. There's typically an open discussion part at the end. And Diane Emerson is a person to contact if there's something that you think is appropriate to put on the agenda. That agenda is currently set, but they discuss modifications to the agenda at the beginning of every meeting. So that might be an avenue to raise awareness in our community and get some of those folks who don't... The two or three people who don't listen to the Brown Briefly, you know, they need to hear about it from some other way.
That's right. I expect there'll be, you know, news coming about on the Beachcomber and Vashon All and other places as this kind of ramps up, unfortunately, because this group of people, you know, they tend to not back down. They have that same bullying attitude that we're seeing echoed in other, you know, there are echoes of that same bullying kind of behavior that we're seeing in other places and parts of the world, including, unfortunately, we've seen in our own government. So,
great. Thanks, Gail. That'd be an interesting topic to follow. And part of the difficulty is that river otters are not considered marine mammals. And so they live in the sound in part, you know, so it's a really, it's not a clear sort of environmental issue, and that's why it's good to bring the law in and bring it to court and get a clear ruling of what's acceptable and not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate everything you're doing, Gail.
Thank you for that.
So in my neighborhood of Ellisport, along with Lynn, I was very impressed this week. I looked out and there was a mass of people on the beach and tents set up and box lunches and all that, and came to find out it was Vashon Nature Center had an all-day field trip with the senior class of Vashon High School at KBI Beach to learn about the ecology of the last large remaining saltwater marsh in central Puget Sound, right here on Vashon Island. So at one point there were many salt marshes, much like KVI, all around central Puget Sound. But today, KVI is the last. All the others have been filled in, have been turned into dry land with no salt marsh anymore. And so we're very fortunate on Vashon to have KVI Beach and KVI Salt Marsh. Lynn.
Well, you know, I feel that same way. And when I first moved here 30 years ago, there was a little fence that divided the main beach from that saltwater marsh, and there were signs on it that said dogs keep out. And my concern is that we're going to lose the integrity of that salt marsh the longer we have this beach looked at as an off-leash park for dogs, because dogs and people and kids are now running around in that salt marsh and, you know, defecating everywhere and kind of destroying a lot of that pickle grass and, you know, a lot of that the parts of not just the quiet that, you know, protects ducks, but just the whole ecology, I think, is shifting. And you know, the difficulty with that little area is that KVI Beach or KVI Radio Tower is kind of in question in terms of who monitors and who enforces, you know, rules along that area and who can protect that marsh. So I'm glad to see the Nature Center involved there and hope that what they might do is take it on as some kind of a protection project and try to find some way to re-sign it or get somebody from either Vashon Parks District or King County Parks District or KVI radio station to support having protections for that salt marsh, because right now it's just open to the air and to all the traffic that runs across it. Do you know anything about that controversy, Bruce?
Yeah, and one of the things that's happening, both the Vashon Nature Center and the Land Trust are working with the new owners of KVI Beach. KVI was sold, was owned by Sinclair Broadcasting for a number of years, originally owned by Golden West. After it was sold, the original KVI was sold to Golden West, which was Gene Autry's radio empire. And then it was sold to Sinclair. Now Sinclair has sold it to a California conglomerate of radio stations that has a very different sort of agenda than Sinclair. So there's some hope that the new owners will step up and do more to sort of preserve the beach. But we'll see. It's a long, long process, but at the same time, people are working on it. So
thanks, Bruce.
So anything else on the island of note to people? If not, let's move into state news. And Kevin, can you help us declutter a little bit what's going to happen at this indivisible Vashon meeting and what the discussion about the legislature's actions is going to be about?
Well, let me, the meeting will be focusing on environment, climate, healthcare, good government, police reform, and items like that. So Bailey DeYoung, Melvin Mackey, myself, and Jim Austin, who's the head of the healthcare bill tracking team of the State Indivisible Group, will be joining us that night. I'd be happy to give a quick summary of some of the notable bills that I saw pass this session, if you'd like to hear.
Sure.
Absolutely. Woohoo.
All right. Well, you know, some things that did go and some things that didn't go. But on gun safety, the legislature did ban high capacity magazines in Washington State.
Woo!
That has been a long drawn out attempt for improving the safety of citizens who might get caught in an unfortunate situation and fewer lives are expected would be lost as a consequence. The other thing is a House bill prohibits the carrying of weapons at local government meetings, school board meetings, and election sites.
Oh, excellent.
And it seems like that's going to be important as the rhetoric and the potential threats of violence increase across the country. And we've also in the state restricted the manufacture, sale, and purchase of ghost guns, which are untraceable weapons. abortion access, we know what's going on at the federal level and attempts to reduce access to abortion, but A House bill in Washington clarifies existing laws in our state, ensuring that qualified abortion care providers have legal protection no matter what happens at the federal level. So the state legislature is protecting the access to women's health. Housing, several bills introduced, not a lot of motion on making those bills into law, but in the budget, there's more than $400 million for affordable housing and homelessness. And so that's a good step forward.
Absolutely.
And funding to create an alert system to help identify and locate missing Indigenous women and people where violence against Indigenous women is underreported and often ignored by law enforcement. Plus $30 million, an increase, a doubling of the budget for immigration resettlement services in the state. We're a large contingent of Afghan refugees, given that our departure from Afghanistan, and of course, future Ukrainian refugees. So we had the greenest transportation package in state history is passed, including a new bridge over the Columbia River and also transit, bike, and pedestrian projects. Just a few things that didn't make it. Tax reform to tax a 1% tax on the wealthiest 100 people in Washington did not pass. There was an attempt to criminalize lying about elections, would make it a crime for politicians to incite lawlessness by making false statements about election results. When has that ever happened? That bill did not pass, but thank you, Governor Inslee, for championing that. And election reform, ranked choice voting was on the in the docket, but did not pass this year. So quite a range of things happened in the legislature.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, Kevin, it's quite common that change happens over time with regard to legislatures. Am I not right that bills will often go up, you know, several times before they're passed? So this, even though something isn't passed, doesn't mean it's dead in the legislature.
There's a lot of stage setting in that process, sort of like the wheels of justice, but like the high capacity magazine restriction now, eventually good legislation does move forward. So,
and a good example of that is the Vashon Bridge. It first passed the legislature in 1952, and it didn't fail until 1961 for the last time, and then the bridge was never built. But for almost over 10 years, the bridge was on the agenda of the legislature every year, and most islanders were pushing for it until toward the end when you began to get a voice against the bridge. But, you know, not all legislation, you know, even after 10 years, passes. And for the Vashon Bridge, thank goodness it didn't pass, but it was on the legislative agenda for over 10 years. So you're right, Gail, it takes time.
Yeah, and I was
hope
involved
the will of the people prevails.
Sorry. I was involved in passing some legislation around certification and then licensure of social workers and all of that. And what I learned about part of that process is that it's actually planned to have kind of an introductory season where you have to educate everybody about what is the intent of the legislation and to build some alliances and to, you know, get people interested in it. And yes, it is almost expected to fail sometimes, you know, new legislation the first time because people don't know much about it, and it takes repetition and it takes some thought and alliance building and strategy to get it through the second or third time sometimes. Gail?
I'm just going to just thank you for that, Lynn, and say I think ranked choice voting in particular may fall in that category where it takes a lot of education to understand it before it's going to pass. But I have high hopes for that, as well as some of the other bills that didn't pass. But
mm-hmm. The other thing I'll add is that the legislative process is just one step of many to actually create the regulatory environment in which we all live. After a bill becomes a law, then it goes into a phase called rulemaking. And what happens in that phase is the legislation is turned into the revised Code of Washington language, which basically guides how government agencies interpret and enact the content of the legislation. So those who are advocates of making change need to recognize that the passing the bill is just the first step. So many things happen in the after passage of a bill and rulemaking that they can strengthen or weaken the legislation. So it's helpful to stay involved in the process all the way through the revised code of Washington being published, if you really care about an issue.
Kevin, I think that falls into the, we'll call it an old Irish proverb of there being many a slip twixt the cup and the lip.
I like it.
And that's why they had sawdust on the floors of most of the pubs. Right?
Now that was for spitting.
Well, we're getting down to the last few minutes here. Let's take a few moments and sort of reflect on what's happening in Ukraine. Any thoughts from the Briefleys?
Oh my gosh, you hear us go into dead silence, you know, sadness and rage and all of that before we can speak.
Kevin?
I think, you know, it is amazingly frustrating to watch the continued violence and in Ukraine, the feeling of inability to take action, right? But we also have to recognize that what we're doing in the US and NATO response is we're also trying to contain the violence. And that is extremely unfortunate and and very disturbing to have to watch it. But we have to understand the trade-offs of escalation and promoting the violence in a broader sense. It doesn't mean that Ukrainians should be abandoned in any sense of the word, but it's a trade-off. And it's a difficult one to make, and it's one filled with frustration and angst. And I hope people are recognizing that these are difficult decisions, and patience is, I think, warranted because we want to make the best decisions we can in a time of crisis, of which we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Sure, Lynn.
I really thought a lot about that ban on Russian oil, and I'm really watching our gas prices go up over here on the island now. It's, you know, over $5 a gallon because we pay a fee to get gas on the island, so we already have a higher gas price out here, which is kind of the cost of doing business on a or living on an island. And you know, as people have talked to me about how much they're paying for gas, I just want to reinforce that for me, it's the cost of standing up to Putin. You know, we're not drafting people and sending them over to fight on the ground yet in Europe, and hope that we don't. But I think we have to do something that, you know, puts a dent in their economy. I'm already seeing refugees fleeing Russia because they can't get money and they can't get anything they need. So there's a huge crisis over there that I don't know if it will deter Putin or not, but I think we have to do something. And for me, it's acceptable. I am willing to pay a higher price for gas, knowing that that's sort of my sacrifice as part of this effort to counter Putin's moves. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Gail, last minute.
Okay, are you ready for the poem? All right. Sure. This is the soothing part of the show, perhaps, I hope. It's called Prayer on a Sleepless Night. Fill my head with darkness. Blow out the candle of ever-burning questions. Let stillness reign. Lift off the roof and let me float in the silence between the moon and Mars. Let me dream of nothing and no one. Mm-hmm. Reveal no great thoughts to me. Let the hours slip by unnoticed. Let the sheep on both sides of the fence graze peacefully uncounted. Bring back the nights of childhood when my eyes fluttered shut and then suddenly it was morning. So I wrote that on one of my many sleepless nights recently.
Thank you, Gail.
Thank you so much.
Great way to end this show. So for Gail, Kevin, Lynn, and Truman, I'm Bruce Hallman. See you next week for the Brown Briefly. Take care, be safe, and pray for the Ukraine.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.